You're listening to a Giraffe audio recording.
I'm more talking about, because what I do feel more and more is that to get a good result, you have to involve the actors as much as possible in the process of finding the result. If you impose things on them, it will always feel empty, and they just fulfill something. The director was invented at the end of 19th century, so it's a very young profession. And what happened after a while that this profession of a director existed, the actors stopped thinking. They left it to the director. He was thinking for them about the intellectual impact, about how to tell the story, in which way, aesthetics and so on. So what he's saying is that brain or thought was put into the hand of the director. And he says, this you can see in all theater, and that makes it terrible. And in order to overcome this, you have to bring back the director on stage. Because when the profession of director was invented, it was one of the actors being sent down to sit and tell the others if they are in the light or not. Now you have to bring back directors on stage to bring back thought and intellectual reflection and abandon directors. Again, I'm quoting Bierbichler. He says, in Germany there are two kinds of actors. The one kind is waiting for the call of the casting director to make a movie or television at home. The other kind is waiting for the call of the casting director in an ensemble of a theater. These are the two kinds of actors, according to Josef Bierbichler.
Yeah.
Which means that the spirit of most of the German theater companies is completely fucked up.
Yeah.
There's no more true spirit of why we are together as an ensemble, what do we want to tell, why are we making theater.
But in defense of this idea of not thinking as an actor, just for the sake of the discussion, I think there is a cliche. I never went to acting school or actually trained, so I don't know, but I think I heard the cliche about a really intelligent person can't make a good actor. There's a cliche because they are too analytical about what they might be doing within a scene. And they know too much, or they want to know too much. Whereas the really emotional actor, or the instinctive actor, in that structural sense, the stupid actor, I mean, not literally stupid, but within, might be more effective because they can just be rooted into the problems and projects of the character rather than of the event. So would you think maybe there is a sense in which actors shouldn't be concerned too much with the show?
If you were, I'm not saying they should be concerned with the show. I'm more saying they should be concerned in truths on two levels, which is the truths of an author in the sense of the you know, the word autor, author, is a Latin word, auctoritatis, which is the one who is at the origin of a project, the source of the project. So what I'm trying to find is the truth of an actor. You might call it intellectual truth, as saying this guy understands the origin of the work. Like, this is very important, I do believe, to go on stage, to understand what is the first idea, what was the first idea or the first emotional impulse. So this truth I try to find, or an actor should find, and the other one is the emotional truth. I think what you're talking about is, in saying, an actor should feel and so on. I think it's a very European thing to make this distinction between thought and feeling. I think it can go along, or it has to go along. And the one thing for why we're having this discussion is, I do believe, because it's very difficult to feel, or it's very difficult to pretend to feel on stage. So all the methods in acting are more or less concerned about this. For example, looking at our show, if I was talking to you Bush, in this moment where you really get angry, you should get really angry. Mm-hmm. Stupid. Mm-hmm. As long as you know, when you say everybody calm down, mm-hmm. this is a feeling, mm-hmm. it's a true emotion. Mm-hmm. When you live the given circumstances of the show and of the thoughts mm. and of the action developing, you are naturally
in the feeling.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And you should not be concerned, because when an actor feels, I'm not feeling enough, or I'm not enough in the emotion, and the director goes saying, you're not enough in the emotion, it's over.
Mm. There was something interesting, though, I'd like about, I wanted to go in many different directions, but just the one thing, I have been in situations in life where you go, I'm not feeling the right thing here. That's an interesting bad acting in life. Mm-hmm. So acting as an idea of living, as a philosophy mm-hmm. of living, am I acting properly here? So for example, at my father's funeral, going, I'm not crying enough here. I'm not giving the audience mm-hmm. who've come to see this thing, they will think I have no feelings, and maybe I don't, and what is my emotional truth? And it's a very, and that's what I call...
But this is the wrong and the right concept at the same time. Because what you're describing here, this is very beautiful. And actually, the point of all my thinking about theater. Because what you were describing is, I'm not giving the audience around you the feeling that I loved him enough. So all your emotion was not about you, it was about them. So you are trying to put the mask of the grieving child, the mourning child. And as long as you understand that all our being in a social world is about putting different roles and masks to adapt to situations, so you fulfill the expectations of the people around you, and you even develop a playfulness with that, you're fine. I think it gets very difficult when you are cursed with one of the major curses of our times, which is authenticity. That can kill you if you're like going, when you really get into this feeling of, I'm not mourning, I'm not crying enough, my father died, and then you start dealing with yourself. It can end in a mental asylum, because you put too much pressure on yourself. You know, mm-hmm. I think it was you who said, there is no I without a social
when we were talking about the Sartre quote. But I was also talking about this with Hayden last night, Andrew Hayden, because of this Colm Tobin article on Erebon, about the experience of going from a small town to the city, and how the voice changes a lot of the time. Suddenly somebody has a very sort of cosmopolitan sort of city accent and moving in different circles. And then when you hear them on the phone to their family, there's a very thick, let's say, regional accent. And then you question the person. This is in this article about Erebon. The person is questioned. Oh, I just heard you speaking to your family and you put on, you're very inauthentic. You really perform with yourself. And the writer, Colm Tobin, in this article, reflects on people who haven't had to adapt. And that's the real problem, is to not understand the job of social adaptation and to read it as inauthenticity, as opposed to it being the fragmentary social situation.
Did you have to adapt?
No. And I was reflecting on this last night as something I misunderstood, that initially I was naive and I thought my consistency of seemingly accent or whatever it might be, I took pride in that. I'm being really clear and authentic or whatever. And then you realize, no, but you haven't been forced into a circumstance where you have to fragment and perform yourself.
Right.
So it's privilege, this so-called authentic self is actually a fantasy, you know.
First of all, I would 100% agree it's a privilege. It's a privilege, and I would even go saying you feel with people when they have this gift that they never had in their life, this moment where their neck was broken, in a way. Because that gives them much more... in the self-appearance, or the appearance gives them much more confidence in themselves, in their appearance, in the way they interfere with others. And this is very helpful. This is another issue for the reproduction of dominant classes. Because you need this, you know, a guy like Erebon, where you can feel like you were imitating him before, we can feel all the horror of the social violence, he'd never be able to run a political party or to give a speech in front of, 10,000 people in a rally. While when you look at Eddie Redmayne in all his appearance in the talk show, you feel the class which was carrying him all. And because the class, family, the school, the institutions carried him, his whole talent of public speech, of humor, of entertainment,
confidence
could blossom,
yeah.
and that's another reason for why working class kids have difficulties in drama schools.
Yeah.
Not only cannot afford it, but also their social self is so insecure that it's not possible for them to go on stage.
Yeah. I must say that sense of sort of confidence that is instilled in privilege, which I got in my life, you know, and it sort of disgusts me. There's no question for me that I'm sitting with you here now as a result of a sort of confidence that you can have. Now, the only relationship I have with it is, let's say, disgust.
Disgust with what?
With the sense that this confidence opens doors, carries you through social situations, and it's perceived often as, like you say, a sort of deep psych, well, that person is confident and insecure, rather than it's social conditioning. That's a result of privilege.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Because
the No, but that's... there's no reason to be disgusted about that, because every person, every child should be brought
should
up
have,
like
no,
you.
Of course. But I mean...
What we should have to change is that there is a marginalized, underprivileged class who did not have this.
So I mean, in a moment, in a historical moment of inequality, that's where it's perceived as disgust. Not in itself. It should be raised so everybody has it.
Yeah.
But I mean, the resulting phrase you use is, I deserve this, you know, or I should be here. And the antithesis of that is, I shouldn't be here. And that feeling, I know a lot of working class friends of mine, they even when they achieve things, there's a sense of, like, I shouldn't have this.
It's my feeling.
Yeah.
It's my constant feeling.
Yeah.
My constant feeling is, I shouldn't be here. I
will be found out.
I will be found out. I will be excluded.
And so I'm wondering, rather than just, of course it's a problem, like it shouldn't be the case that anybody should feel that, but the fact that it is the case, do you see that sometimes as an opportunity to go, you can come into an institution, which is perhaps like a theatrical world, and bring an energy like an outsider or something, and you can actually have more?
Yeah, one of my first works, like some, for example, when I did Shopping and Fucking, my professor, Peter Kleiner, I don't know if you ever met him, but he's the guy who does now every season work with the students in the studio. Great guy. He always told me, oh, he told me about my first works, which I did. You know, he said, you know, the true quality of your work, Thomas, is the criminal energy it has. And I now, having this conversation, I start to understand what he was saying by this, you know, that exactly what you were raising was your question as a thought, that because you arrived in this institution and you still have this anger of the humiliation of this other background, you have another violent or criminal energy in your work. But this is, again, also very depressing, because this is what the cultural industry and the consumerist industry immediately picks up and exploits.
Commodifies it, of course. Come to an Ostermar show for your hit of punk, your punk bourgeois,
right,
within a bourgeois punk hit.
Right.
You get,
it,
you
exploits,
know.
It exploits the energy.
Yeah, yeah. But presumably you feel... Maybe we'll wrap it up soon because you probably have to go. But to back into the question then of directing and what it's, what's the word, what it's for. But what I suppose you obviously do believe it's worth sticking in the system, staying in the system and directing plays in theatres, which is always within a certain structure and speaking in a certain part of culture. And the energy, with all the risks that you just said about the energy being pacified or commodified.
I was outside the system for a while. People do tend to forget this. I was outside the system. I was doing off theater in Berlin before I went to drama school.
Yeah.
And while I was going to drama school, my first show I did in a squatted house with friends, and it was complete off theater. It made a big, it created a big sensation. even Kastorf came and saw the show, even though we were completely unknown. But I know how it is to be outside the system.
I suppose an aesthetic of, I always think, the reason why, to put it crassly, the question of realism and formalism,
mm-hmm.
let's say, within work,
mm-hmm.
because I always thought the danger of recognizability
mm-hmm.
is that if the world looks like itself to the people who watch it,
mm-hmm.
it becomes, even whatever you're saying,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a way of reaffirming the world.
Mm-hmm.
So an unrecognizability, and let's
mm-hmm.
use Castellucci
mm-hmm.
as an example,
mm-hmm.
to go and see the world as absolutely an alien universe,
mm-hmm.
and there is no way you can access it,
mm-hmm.
becomes a critique, perhaps, of the world in its way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I found, with working with you, this great passion
mm-hmm.
for the world as we know it and recognize
mm-hmm.
it, from a psychological point
mm-hmm.
of view, forget the
mm-hmm.
sort of questions of
mm-hmm.
staging,
mm-hmm.
but to find and chase the truth
mm-hmm.
of psychological situations.
Of the moment.
And does that risk, let's call it a type of realism, it risks reminding the world of itself and reassuring it, whatever you're showing.
I never thought about it that way. I'm just telling you, this is the way I want to work at
mm-hmm.
the moment. There's no philosophical background to this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are having this idea about formalism and naturalism, and you have to show that you're alienated from the world. I never had these thoughts. I simply do what feels right for me and what I adore and what I can be passionate about and where I can put all my love. At the moment, I could not imagine myself telling the guy, and when you go saying this sentence, you do this, and then you turn around and go here and take care of your hand, because otherwise it's not in the light. I wouldn't feel at ease. I would hate it. And I would, what I would especially not feel at ease with would be, I like, maybe you experienced it now, I like to have conversations with my performers on what do we want to tell? What's the point here? What is your point? What do you want to bring? What do you want to add to the show, to the thoughts on the universe, and so on? And this is, for me, an incredible pleasure to see how things develop, to see how your dialogues develop, to see how your humor, how you brought the comic to the show, the humor to the intellectual discussion. This is my pleasure.
And I must say, for the record as well, then, in this, about, it was what I was saying to you last night, what I have found a great pleasure about being directed as a director in the show by you. This direction you gave, say anything, say different words, you know, keep your colleagues surprised and alive. Beyond that being a true piece of direction, because you genuinely keep thinking and keep the conversation real and fresh, the great effect this had is that at every moment I'm thinking, as I would be in a real conversation, what should I say now? Should I interrupt them? Should I?
But you know, or maybe you don't, when I started as a director, I was 100% formalist.
Mm.
Meyerhold, the work I did in the beginning, the first years, everything, every gesture, every movement was fixed.
So you did engage in those debates then, at the beginning, you like an argument, formalism is what we have.
That was not coming out of debate.
But just an instinct for that.
Taste.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I hated naturalistic theater.
Yeah.
It was so fucking boring.
Yeah.
I didn't want to see it. And I wanted theater to be as extraordinary as circus, you know. I wanted to see my actors flying. I wanted to have physical experiences while watching physical theater. That was my point. And I did a lot of shows like that. Very choreographed, like you said yesterday, ballet.
Yeah.
That was 100% how I did it. No. Daniela, warum ruft die nicht auf dem Zimmer an? Du sagst mir doch jetzt bestimmt, dass sie im Foyer ist. Dann kann sie doch auf dem Zimmer anrufen, oder?
You're gonna go?